Hi, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And as always, it's just wonderful to have you join me today because, as always, we have great conversations in store for you, inspiring information that I know will allow you to find your path to health and well-being. And before we get going, I just want to be sure that everyone is opting into my website, What Women Must Know, because I have these special reports and I have a special ebook. So it's a place to get great information. I have many of my articles posted on my website, and that's, you know, that's what I'm all about, getting you educated. And another great place to go is my Facebook page, which just so happens to be What Women Must Know. So that's a place where I do lots of postings every day, and anything that crosses my path that really inspires me and has some great information, I will put up on that Facebook page. And often there's lots of great recipes I add to that page as well. So be sure to go by, like me, and just keep expanding your awareness. Just keep learning and growing. And speaking of learning and growing, we have a great guest with us today all the way from Sydney, Australia. So it's so much fun to be able to coordinate our time so we can get together. And my guest today is a New York Times best-selling author. She is Sarah Wilson, who is a blogger. She is a wellness coach. She has a impressive journalism career, which spanned over 20 years, and she was involved with television, radio, magazines, newspapers, and online. And she's a former editor of Cosmopolitan magazine and was the host of the first series of Master Chef Australia, the highest rating show in Australian TV history. Not an easy thing to accomplish. She appears regularly as a commentator on a range of programs all around Australia. And she is, in addition to all that, an adept social commentator following a career that spanned politics, health advocacy, restaurant reviewing, opinion writing, and trend forecasting. She's also a qualified health coach with the Institute for Integrative Nutrition in New York. And Sarah is also the author of the best-selling book, which has made the New York Times best-selling list, which I acknowledged her for earlier because I thought that was a wonderful accomplishment, called I Quit Sugar. And it's a fantastic book that we're going to be exploring that is an opportunity to share Sarah's journey and her passion and her purpose in educating people about what sugar is all about and what the options are so we can live a truly healthy sugar-free life. So welcome, Sarah, to the show.
Well, oh, thank you. That's very kind, and thank you very much for that very kind introduction.
You know, I want to tell you, Sarah, I spend a lot of time in Australia, and people send me all sorts of clips of various shows, and I think the first time I encountered you, weren't you on a show that was talking all about sugar, and it was that guy that went into the MRI, and they gave him a sip of Coca-Cola, and they looked at what was happening in his brain, and didn't you appear on that segment?
Yeah, it was. I think that might have been a 60-minute segment, actually.
I think it was.
They came and filmed me. I was at the time living in a place called Byron Bay, and you've been to Australia, you're probably familiar with the area. It's a beautiful, beautiful beachside area. I think it's one of the most beautiful beaches in Australia. They came and filmed me when I was living up there and sort of tracked my journey, you know, quitting sugar, and then they sort of went overseas and contacted all the various people that I'd interviewed over time and who were the people who researched back my 8-week program. So they kind of did their own behind-the-scenes journey with it all.
Well, it's great to be meeting you in person because that clip actually was a clip I've used in my workshops.
And, oh, wonderful.
It's very powerful, a very powerful clip. And we should just tell all the people listening in that in this expose on sugar, really, they gave the reporter a sip of Coca-Cola. It wasn't very much, and put her in an MRI and looked at her brain. Do you remember what that outcome was?
I think they were tracking a dopamine and we're watching how addictive it is. And there's a lot of commentary on how sugar is as addictive as cocaine. Now, those studies have been done on rats, you know, and I think everybody needs to be aware that some of these studies when it comes to nutrition, and Cheryl, you'd be aware of this, obviously, you know, it's not gold standard science because we can't do it on human beings. It'd be unethical. So, but these studies using the MRI actually show just how the brain lights up when being fed sugar. And there's parts of the brain that light up, which light up in the same way when we're fed other kinds of drugs. And that's one of the big issues with sugar. And, of course, when we're talking sugar, we're talking fructose, which is one half of the sort of the sugar molecule, you know, general table sugar or high fructose corn syrup, is that it is addictive. We have no off switch for it. We are designed to binge on it. We are designed to get addicted to it because it's such a great source of fat. And, you know, back when we were evolving, you know, back in caveman days, when our genes were evolving and we were becoming human beings, that was a fantastic thing. We needed that fat for being, you know, when we were being chased by wildebeest across the savannas. But, of course, we know today that we don't have that same need, and we've got so much sugar on the planet. And therefore, this kind of biological urge or this biological predisposition to binge on sugar and to be addicted to it is a real curse.
Well, it's certainly all around us now, and we, you know, it's hard to get away from it. And if it's as addictive as cocaine, we can see why people are in the craving, you know, the whole craving cycle, even when we try really hard. You know, I'd like us to start in our conversation today, Sarah, about your journey. What got you so passionate? I mean, you've been involved in the, you know, the media and publishing. You know, you're kind of, you know, involved in the world of just that high-paced, fast-paced world. What happened that made this such a passion for you and really changed the direction of your life in many ways?
Well, it was exactly that fast-paced life in many ways. I was in my mid-30s and, you know, as you mentioned in the introduction, I was the editor of Cosmopolitan magazine at the time, and I got very unwell. I developed Hashimoto's, which is a thyroid disease. It's known as Hashimoto's, but some of your listeners might know it as hypothyroid. And it's an autoimmune disease, and I really crashed. I basically burnt myself out. I burnt my adrenals out and got very, very unwell, to the point where I had to sort of quit work. I wasn't able to walk. And I remember the doctor at the time said to me, "It's a miracle you're actually vertical." And once he said that, I actually gave myself permission to collapse in a heap. And I had to really rebuild my health, and it took quite some time. And, you know, along the way, a few people said, "You really need to quit sugar." And I really was resistant to it because, as some of your listeners who might have this particular disease or any kind of autoimmune disease might know, is that you actually have really bad blood sugar levels when you've got an autoimmune disease. All your hormones are thrown out. And so I was addicted really badly. So I was very resistant. But I eventually bit the bullet and decided I have to do this. And I decided to write about it. And I decided to commit to 2 weeks. You know, nothing too harsh. I don't believe in diets. I didn't want it to become a draconian thing, you know, where it stigmatized things. And I thought, I'll just try it gently. And I gave it a go and for 2 weeks. And within 2 weeks, I really experienced a massive transformation. My energy levels really balanced out for the first time in really years. And my skin changed. That was the other thing. So I think, you know, my vanity meant that I was kind of like, well, let's keep going here. This seems to be working. And I just kept going and going. And I was writing about it on my blog and in the column that I was writing. I was writing a weekly column. That was my only work at the time. And people were asking me questions. Well, what about this? And what about that? And what happens here? And I started interviewing people around the world, including Dr. Lustig. I'm sure many of your listeners are aware of his work. And, you know, various other endocrinologists, addiction theorists, psychologists, and spoke to them about, well, how do we exactly quit sugar? There was lots of information on emerging as to why it was bad for us, but how do we go about it, you know, especially if you're addicted like I was? So I just got obsessed. I kept digging and digging and digging, and before I knew it, I had this huge backlog of information, and decided to put it out as an ebook, and then it became a print book, and of course it's now, I think, being sold in over 20 countries around the world.
Well, you know, which is, it's always fascinating how the wounded healer in us, when we are facing mm-hmm. a challenge of some sort, we actually discover that that very issue that was so debilitating and challenging at one point in our life is the springboard that directs
totally.
Us into a whole new direction. It was for me with hormones. That's how I got into the whole hormone
world. That's right.
World.
It's kind of make your mess your message. I heard somebody say that the other day. And for me, I now see my autoimmune disease as an incredible gift. You know, it meant that it was particularly hard for me to quit sugar. But what it means is I'm now very sympathetic and very understanding of the everyday person out there trying to do the same thing now. You know, I get it. I don't assume it's an easy thing to do.
Well, you have compassion. For all
yeah,
those
I think
who are
so
addicted. So
yeah.
What was it like for you when you first started that program of withdrawing off of sugar?
It was hard. I was, I think the emotional side of things was the hardest part. You know, we have incredible associations between sugar and celebration, reward. You know, I was a journalist. I couldn't write a paragraph without rewarding myself with a cup of chai tea with some honey in it or some dark chocolate, you know. I had to get up and go to the fridge every half an hour and reward myself. So that was the hardest thing. Within the 2 weeks, I did experience, withdrawal, but it was mostly emotional. The real kind of detox withdrawal type stuff, you know, where I guess our bodies start to break down some of those fat cells that contain the toxins, you know, and we start to go through that transformation from being, and I'm putting it very, very crudely here, but we go from being a sugar burning machine to a fat burning machine. Mm-hmm. That process kicked in around about week 4, week 5, and it does for most people. About 300,000 people now have done my 8-week program, either through the books or via the online program, and I find that, you know, it's around about week 4, week 5, most people go through that detox process. So in the first 2 weeks, it's actually quite good. You do get some good results, mainly on your skin, and that's enough, to motivate people to keep going. Having said that, though, my hunger was going through all these ups and downs, and, you know, with my program and the studies I did into how to quit sugar, I really found that the best way to go about this process is to replace the sugar you're taking out with good fats and proteins. And it's really interesting because, of course, the reason why we got onto this whole sugar addictive cycle, it sort of kicked off in the 1960s when fat was taken out of our diets. The whole low fat movement really saw sugar intake just skyrocket. And of course, that's when all the metabolic diseases rose at the same time and obesity rose. So, you know, ironically, or perhaps not so ironically for those of us who now know how it all works, you know, as we ate more low fat products and less saturated fat, we all got fatter and sicker. So what I'm doing is doing the opposite of what the manufacturers have been doing for the last sort of, you know, 60, 70 years. Instead of taking the fat out and putting sugar in, I'm taking sugar out and putting the fat back in. And that process actually makes quitting sugar a lot easier. You really need to be eating fat and protein through this, which from a psychological point of view or an emotional point of view, it's great because you can actually replace that treat thinking with, instead of having, you know, some dessert, you have a cheese platter, you know, and we're actually able to eat some of these foods that we've been avoiding. You know I've been avoiding for the last 40 years because I thought they were bad. Things like beautiful halloumi cheese and coconut milk and coconut products and butter and, you know, really good nutritious food. We actually start to eat these things and not only do we feel better, we feel full. And we start to lose weight because our body, as I say, becomes a fat-burning machine instead of a sugar-burning machine. And it's a real shock to people. because, of course, we grew up thinking fat's bad, fat's what makes us fat. It's a real revelation when we realize, no, it's the sugar that's been making us fat all along.
And I think that's what is so shocking for the population that's been so inoculated, you might say, with those belief systems, that the very basis upon which we're making our choices is a flawed theory. So because of the flawed theory, it's leading us into a demise of our health because we're not really understanding the body and what it needs.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's really hard for people to understand that because we sort of peg so many things on science. Science must be true, you know. It was a scientific theory. Well, the science was, as you say, absolutely flawed, and it was only, it wasn't that long ago, it was less than 10 years ago, that somebody dug it all up and found actually that science was, I won't go as far as saying bodgy, but it was flawed.
I think you
was,
can go so far as to say that.
I think I probably should. I think most scientists would agree. It was a study of 22 countries, and this particular scientist decided to only cherry pick the 7 countries that suited his theory that he was wanting to prove. And so he found the country 7 that suited his theory, and that informed this idea that saturated fat makes us fat and causes heart disease. And that then led to the food pyramid, the FDA's food pyramid. And of course that message spread around the world, and we inherited it here in Australia, the FDA, you know, food pyramid. And so we all based our eating on these guidelines for, you know, several generations now. I think you make a really good point. I think that the idea that, you know, it's flawed science is really hard to get our heads around. But what I think is even harder is this idea that there's these nutritional bodies out there that are still, you know, peddling these messages. You know, it's like I get greeted with this all the time. Well, hang on, this sort of makes sense. I can see what you're saying, but why aren't we being warned? Why isn't the government, or why isn't the Heart Foundation, or, you know, the various nutritional bodies, why aren't they telling us this? And I think what's really hard, you know, to explain to people is, well, they're vested. They've now put so much into these theories, it's very hard for them to backpedal, and there's financial interests. You know, we have these nutritional bodies funded by the very food producers that are producing this food, you know, this low-fat, high-sugar food. It's a tricky situation, and I guess my argument is, rather than get too upset about it, take control of your own health. It's quite simple. You know, do the experiment on yourself. As I say, just try it for a couple of weeks and see what happens. It doesn't have to be a diet. Just try it on yourself and see how you go.
So I want to go back to when you had that experience of being burnt out as a journalist, working really hard in your 30s, which I find really common, especially for women in Sydney and in cities in general.
Yes.
So what happened in regards to your Hashimoto's?
Well, the first thing that happened, and, you know, obviously I'm speaking to the right person here, you understand the whole hormonal setup that goes on with Hashimoto's. The first thing that happened was my period started to play up, and really, I mean, this is quite a funny story. I'll try to make it quick, but when I was editor of Cosmopolitan, we were doing a story on the egg timer test, and I don't know if you know about this test, but it's sort of a test that was developed, you know, 10 years ago or so, that helped women who were in their 30s work out how much longer they had before they became infertile. Not entirely watertight science, but it was all fairly new, and nobody in the office was at the right point in their cycle to do this particular test. And what do you know, I was the editor, and I was like, oh gosh, I'll have to go and do it, you know. And I went along and did this test, and what do you know, a couple of weeks later, they came back to me and went, listen, we hate to say it to you, but your hormones are completely negligent. We're surprised you're still getting your period, and there's something really seriously going wrong here. So that was the catalyst. I went and got a bunch of tests done and realized that, you know, my thyroid hormones were well and truly out. And by this stage, my body was at, you know, near collapse stage. So once I stopped, and once I was no longer relying on my adrenaline to get me through the day, and I should point out, I was pushing myself, you know, ridiculously. I was doing 24-hour mountain bike races. I was doing these big fun runs. I used to run to work. I used to run 6-7 miles to work. I know. I was working. I was sleeping 5 hours a night. And you know, the tireder I got, the harder I pushed myself. And I, you know, I was working on weekends, thinking that somehow that would fix the problem. And I was just losing momentum. You know, I was losing the grip. And I actually see it as my body was telling me to stop because my mind was not capable of it. It was like, well, we're going to collapse in a heap in the middle of the road here, and you cannot pass until you address this. Mm. So as I say, my Hashimoto's was a gift. It got me to stop and reassess my life and get well, like properly well. So my hair began to fall out. My nails thinned out to a point where it was almost just skin. You know, there was really very little nails left. Lost the outer third of my eyebrows, which is one of the weirder symptoms of Hashimoto's. My digestion ground to a halt, so terrible constipation. I lost my periods in the end. And then I started to put on weight. So once I was stopped drawing on my adrenals and sort of stopped, everything kind of unraveled. And, you know, I'd basically depleted my whole body of thyroid hormones. Yeah, everything ground to a halt, and I put on quite a lot of weight. It was sort of about 30 pounds, and, you know, in a matter of 4 weeks or so. So it was quite, you know, shocking. I think any woman who puts on weight gets quite freaked out. So, and I just couldn't leave the house. I got so weak. You know, I got foggy headed and I got depressed. And my whole world came to a crashing halt. And, you know, I couldn't work. I couldn't walk. I couldn't do all the things that made me me. And that's the thing. As you know, Cheryl, you know, every single cell in our body has a thyroid receptor, you know, receptor. And when you have no thyroid hormones, pretty much every cell of your body gets affected in one way or another. And if it's, you know, it's not an ache here, it's an ache there. If it's not a symptom here, it's a symptom there. And it's very hard for people who have this disease because there's not really a consistent set of symptoms. It can affect people in all different ways because it affects the entire body. I think it generally goes for the vulnerable parts, you know. So yes, I was in that state, I'd say for a good 9 to 12 months as I, you know, had to gradually rebuild my health. And I started to get some real traction as we were talking about earlier once I quit sugar.
Yeah, so that was one of those major triggers in turning things around for you. Now, what's interesting about your story, and by the way, Sarah, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's many years ago. So this whole issue of Hashimoto's is very near and dear to my heart. And, you know, I've been researching since then ways to really go in and heal Hashimoto's at the root cause level. So there's some really exciting information coming out about that, and it can be healed. And what is interesting, you may already know this, that 80% of all thyroid conditions are related to the autoimmune origins of Hashimoto's. So 80% of all thyroid issues are really autoimmune and Hashimoto's. But because it's not tested properly with the thyroid antibodies, most doctors totally miss it and just give people their thyroid meds, where in actual fact, the real problem is in their gut.
Totally agree. It's all about rebuilding your gut and reducing the inflammation. And, I mean, the way I see it, it's like this big, messy ball of wool. By the time you arrive at a point with Hashimoto's, you've done some serious damage to your body, right? It's a whole range of factors. And you can't find that kind of end of the ball of wool and, you know, oh, there it is, and let's just pull it out and unravel this whole issue. It doesn't work that way. You've got to loosen it. You've got to loosen this big, knotty ball of wool, and gradually that ball of wool unravels and you can soften everything. That's the way I see it. And as you say, you start with the gut, then you've got to address a bit of this and a bit of that. And, you know, it's about probiotics, but then it's also about, you know, avoiding gluten and cutting back on inflammation. And, you know, it's a whole range of factors. There's no one thing that can fix Hashimoto's. It's got to be about whole wellness, you know?
Yes, because the systems have fallen apart, and you've got to repair all those systems that are involved, as you were saying. And you know, when I listen to your story, it's such a powerful story because yes, you know, you pushed yourself. You really had very little regard to the needs of your body. You had a very strong will. You were very ambitious, right? And it just laid you out flat, and you had to stop. And that was, I'm sure, part of your transformation because you reevaluated everything you were doing.
Yeah, and I try to encourage, I write a lot on my personal blog, sarahwilson.com, about, you know, Hashimoto's and autoimmune disease, but not so much just about the biological stuff. I write more about the emotional stuff. I reckon I can spot somebody with Hashimoto's in the street. I'm not surprised, Cheryl, to hear that you've got Hashimoto's.
I had.
You had, okay. Is that you can sort of, you know, they're ambitious. They push themselves too hard. They try to do too many things at once. They're very earnest, you know, but at the same time, they've got an interest in wellness. And I just think, you know, all these factors come together, and I think Hashimoto's, in some ways, is the grounding thing that brings us back to our bodies and gets us real about our health, and takes you on a journey that's so necessary. And there's no way I'd be doing what I'm doing today unless, you know, my Hashimoto's had slammed me, you know, and had really ground me to a halt.
Yeah. Because if you didn't listen, and of course you couldn't really function at that point, you, God knows what would have happened to you. You just were sitting duck for really chronic illnesses.
Correct. Yeah.
So it saved your life in a sense, and it made you wake up. You know, and
I saved my consciousness as well. Like, I have a wonderful life now. I am doing exactly what I want to be doing. I'm doing meaningful work. And to be honest, I think I got sick because I was not happy doing what I was doing. I was editing a magazine where the principals were starting to bother me. You know, Cosmo's a great magazine, but I was starting to get funny about the advertising and the focus on commercialism and, you know, purchasing stuff and that kind of thing. I was a square peg in a round hole, and I think my illness kind of was the thing that kind of went, yeah, no, this is not what we're doing anymore, you know. And I do think that, it steered me to my current, I guess, sense of purpose.
Absolutely. I would imagine that conflict of values would have created an immense amount of stress within you.
Yeah, it certainly did. And it's wonderful now to be able to share information on that with especially young women who are perhaps doing something that they're not happy with and they're just feeling discordant. And, you know, I do like to share my story as often as possible just to, you know, I went off into the abyss. I had no income for 9 to 12 months. I lost everything. At the same time, my car got stolen. I had a tax bill that came in out of the blue that was almost 20 years old, would you believe? Like in a random bank account that I hadn't declared. I was in debt. Everything fell apart. It was, you know, my surfboard got stolen, my phone got stolen, my phone got disconnected. It was actually, you know, comedy after a while. You know, friends would go, "What's happened now, Sarah?" And I go, "Well, you fell apart." You know, I just had to take stock and go, something's going on here. Something is telling me, you know, we need to find a new path.
Well, yeah, it's you know, such a powerful story when you're kind of stripped of everything, which is kind of I like to see that as a metaphor for your ego and you know, and all the ways you've identified yourself and all that was taken away. So you could
I was fat, ugly, jobless, all the things I defined myself by, no longer able to do exercise, and like everything, like it was just my ego just got completely wrung out, you know. I had very little left to cling on to.
Well, and who would have thought, here you are down the track, New York Times bestselling author, inspiring people with their health. And we're going to talk more about some of the steps that you recommend when we come back from our break that we're about to take. But, you know, who would have thought, right? Who would have thought you are such an inspiration for, you know, those 300,000 people and all those that are yet to come that will benefit from the journey you're on? Doesn't that just make you feel great?
Yeah, it does. I've reached a point, I've just recently turned 40, and I am in a very grateful space. So I do sometimes stop and just kind of reflect on it. You have to. I'm very fortunate.
Yep, you are. And on that note, we're all very fortunate to have Sarah Wilson with us here today, who is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, I Quit Sugar. And we're going to take a brief break, so stay with us because Sarah has lots more to share with us when we come back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and you are listening to What Women Must Know. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And today we are talking to Sarah Wilson, all the way from Sydney, Australia. She is the author of the New York Times best-selling book, I Quit Sugar. And we've been talking about Sarah's journey, and we're going to talk more about what she learned and what she incorporated in her book. She's got a beautiful book. Lots of photos, great design layout, and wonderful recipes. So, okay, Sarah, so what are some of the keys that you impart to people to help them quit sugar?
Okay, well, I guess the first thing is I do suggest people treat the whole thing as a gentle experiment. One thing I don't advise is seeing it as a diet. So I like to see it as not restrictive. It's very much about abundance. It's about what you can eat. You know, my book's not called You Must Quit Sugar. It's called I Quit Sugar. I gave it a go. It worked for me. Here's how I did it. You might like to try it too. You know, I'd like to see it as a gentle invitation. So that's the first thing. The next is to set aside 8 weeks. My research has found that it takes that long to reverse a habit successfully. So both from a physical point
of view. Can I jump in there? Why, out of your research, do you know why 8 weeks is that magic time?
Yeah. Well, I referred to basically addiction theory in general, and most psychologists find that all addictions are pretty much the same. And for a long time, they were talking in terms of how long it takes to break the habit in the mind. So the physical addiction is one thing, but it's more to do with the mental, you know, the plasticity of the brain in terms of, you know, creating new pathways in the brain to create a new way of living and going about things. So a lot of the theory up until a couple of years ago was saying that you needed about 21 days. You know, but that required sticking to it solidly. So it meant not even skipping a day. So what you'd find is people who are trying to change a habit of whatever sort, let's say, you know, a diet of some sort, they would get to day 13 and go, you know, slip up for whatever reason and then go, I've stuffed up now. It's all over. I'm going to have to start again. But then thinking, you know, sort of neuroscience, shifted a little bit and found that actually if you allow 60 days and you allow yourself to lapse, make a few, you know, mistakes, go backwards a little every now and then, but sort of get back on the program the following day, then 60 days really solidifies those habits and it allows you to go about it in a far gentler, forgiving way. So I've certainly found that that's the case. I've also found that to switch your body and your taste buds, that's the other thing, to switch your taste buds, it generally only takes 2 weeks for your body to actually change, but to really set up your system so that you are now, you know, seeking out savoury food, not sweet food, I find it takes about 6 weeks. And then, of course, to get your body, your metabolism and your appetite hormones to reform, and I mentioned it before the break, from being a sugar-burning machine to a fat-burning machine, I find does take sort of around about 7 weeks. So that's why I do it as an 8-week program. It really instills some habits, and it also instills the cooking habits, which is a really big part of all of this, Cheryl. I mean, people say to me, oh, but it involves cooking. I'm like, yeah, it does. Michael Pollan, who I'm a big fan of, he says that in his book, Cooked, he says, that cooking is the best way to stand up to the food manufacturers and to reclaim control of our health. And I totally agree. Cooking is non-negotiable. It doesn't have to be complex cooking. It can be 3-4 ingredients. But that's a really big part of the program, is teaching people how to cook really simple stuff. So I guess the next part of it is a big part of the program is when you take the sugar out, we replace it with really good quality fats and proteins. And fat and protein is actually really critical, not only because it replaces that kind of snack. We can replace some of the sugary snacks with, things like nuts and cheese and things like that, but also because it recalibrates our appetite mechanism. So the real problem, well, one of the problems with sugar or fructose is that it is the only food molecule that doesn't have a corresponding hormone in the brain that says, I'm full. So you've probably noticed that you can drink, fruit juice or soda or, whatever it might be, or a chocolate bar, and you can keep going and going and going. Now, if you tried to drink, 12 ounces, 20 ounces of yogurt, you couldn't, because the fat actually triggers off hormones in the brain that says, we've had enough, I'm full, let's stop now. You eat cheese, you eat nuts, you hit reach this point where you go, I can't eat another nut. It doesn't happen with sugar. So what eating fat and protein does, and having it at every meal, is ensures that appetite mechanism starts to kick in. So you get full. And so we're no longer seeking snacks. We're no longer seeking little sugary treats. We're satiated. And like I say, switching from a sugar-burning machine to a fat-burning machine, where our hormones all start to kick into gear. We get hungry at the right time. We get full in an appropriate way. And I call it food freedom. We get that kind of appetite that we used to have as a kid, which I think a lot of people haven't experienced since they were a kid, true hunger. So that's the reasoning there. I then sort of factor in the detox process, which is around about week 4, week 5, and I up the dense nutrition. So we really kind of get lots of leafy greens, and again, the fat and protein helps there. A lot of the vitamins in the leafy greens, vitamins A, E, K, and D, are fat soluble only. So you don't absorb them unless you're eating fat at the same time. So that's why our grandparents and the French and the Greeks all put butter or beautiful olive oil on their vegetables, because you're not absorbing the nutrients otherwise. So we bring in a whole heap of these principles that are all geared at dense nutrition. So it's not just about quitting sugar. It's about replacing all that sugary processed food with really good stuff. So in some ways, the results that people get from quitting sugar, I've got to admit, it's not just about taking the sugar out. It's also about what you're eating instead, and that's why people get such great results with their health, because we're doing the twofold thing, and I think that's really important. And then we actually cut out all sugar from week 2 to the end of week 6, and it's,
what does that
includes
look like?
Fruit.
What does
it includes
like?
Fruit. It means absolutely no obvious added sugars. It means no tomato-based sauces, because they're often full of sugar. I walk everyone through all the things to look out for. No low-fat products, because when people take the fat out, they put sugar in. So all the low-fat versions of your mayonnaise or your yogurt are full of sugar. So we avoid all of those. But we also take out fruit. And a lot of people get freaked out by that, but I'm like, you know what? You will survive, because you'll be getting a lot of roughage and vitamins from your vegetables. We take it out because it's about recalibrating the system so that at the end of week 6, beginning of week 7, you can then reintroduce some fruit back into your diet, and your body is in a position to be able to go, this is how much sugar my body needs. And I used to eat 3 or 4 pieces of fruit a day. I now eat 1 to 2 pieces. I find any more than that just ups my sugar intake beyond what, you know, I need. And that works really well for me. You know, whole fruit's fantastic, but, you know, an apple's about 3 teaspoons of sugar. A banana can be up to 4 teaspoons. And I just, you know, I just find that that's, you know, if I was to have 3 pieces of fruit in one setting, it would send me over the edge, you know. I just keep an eye on it, and I generally eat my fruit straight after a meal so that, you know, the fats and the proteins help digest the food and ensure that it's not a big, you know, fast sugar dump. So, yeah, week 7 is all about seeing, you know, what do you want to do? What's your body saying? Do you want to go back to eating the same amount of sugar that you used to? And, you know, people start to then cook. We introduce some of my sweet recipes where we use some sugars that I, or sweeteners, I should say, that I feel are safe when eating in moderation. So stevia and brown rice syrup, which is breaks down to be pure glucose. It contains no fructose, but it comes with a big caveat. You know, if you're going to use these sweeteners, in moderation. But the thing is with these sweeteners, you can do it in moderation because they don't have that same addictive component that fructose has. So, yeah, at the end of the 8 weeks, most people find that their appetite has shifted, their taste buds have shifted. And really, I would say that nobody really goes back to eating like they used to, because as my best friend once said to me, she said, you just can't unlearn this stuff. Once you know that a glass of apple juice contains 9 to 10 teaspoons of sugar, you really are going to make a different choice, aren't you, at breakfast? You know, you might go back to eating some chocolate and, you know, some cookies and that kind of thing, and that's fine, but you are probably going to be aware of just some of that hidden sugar.
And it's living life in with more moderation, so you don't have to deprive. But you just have the awareness. And, you know, the other thing is, I'm listening to your program, and, you know, we know that sugar can really upset our blood sugar levels, that can be stored as fat. And the other piece about that I just want to mention is that sugar actually robs the body of key nutrients. It actually
Absolutely.
Is an anti-food. It's depleting the body of your B vitamins and your vitamin C and magnesium. So actually, the more sugar you eat, the more depleted your body is nutritionally, which makes it get more and more out of balance. It can't function.
Yeah.
And all these health issues come up because it's like robbing your cells of nutrition. They can't work.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's a really good point. So, you know, and then when you're replacing what you used to eat in terms of, you know, sugary kind of content with extra nutrition, I mean, the benefits just start to sort of be exponential because your body's getting all this, you know, these nutrients, and also being able to absorb the nutrients that you are, in fact, you know, eating. I mean, that was the thing. I had a very healthy-looking diet before I quit sugar. I ate lots of vegetables. I ate plenty of really good foods, but I was eating plenty of sugar as well. And it was in that kind of so-called, quote-unquote, healthy sugar kind of way. I was having honey in my chai tea, and I was eating, you know, healthy granola bars and low-fat yogurt on my fruit salad, and it all looked healthy. But as you say, I wasn't getting the most out of the other good foods I was eating, and even the nutrients in that sugary food, because some of that stuff has got nutrients in it, because I was leaching, you know, the nutrients from all the sugar I was eating.
And then those adrenals of yours were so sensitive, any amount of sugar would put you into a hypoglycemic spin.
And then the inflammation as well. Yeah. Sugar causes inflammation, and any kind of autoimmune disease is an inflammatory disease. Any disease is an inflammatory condition. And so, you know, I often talk about things pivoting from my autoimmune disease, but really, you know, I am a cautionary tale. I'm a cautionary tale of what happens when you don't take proper stock of your health. And it's really, you know, quitting sugar isn't just for people with autoimmune disease. Obviously, it is for everybody. We've all got kind of aches and pains and bits and pieces, which you know, everything from backache to eczema to even overheating, reflux, you know, right down to chronic, you know, full-on metabolic diseases such as diabetes, cholesterol issues. They all benefit from quitting sugar. And, you know, I've got countless testimonials of people who've come off their cholesterol medication and got their cholesterol back in range from doing one thing only, and that was quitting sugar. So, you're absolutely right.
Where do you think sugar sneaks in the most into our diet? If we're going to make people aware of where they're getting their sugar, what do you think one of the sneakiest forms of sugar may be?
Okay, well, I would say low-fat products are the sneakiest form because it's, you know, low-fat products are festooned with labels that say all natural, low-fat, you know, and then you have a look at the back and it's 50% sugar. And in fact, once you eat that product, once it's in your system, so it's on the plate, yes, it's low fat. Once it's in your system, the particular way that we metabolize sugar means it is incredibly high fat because, you know, fructose is not metabolized through our cells and used in a lovely, even paced way as energy throughout the day. It goes to our liver where it's processed to become visceral fat, the worst kind of fat. So I think that's the really big one. I guess the other one would be health food stores. I think that's one of the sneakiest places to find a lot of sugar. Agave, you know, so many health food products contain agave. It's 70 to 90% fructose. It's one of, well, it is the worst source of you know, the harmful fructose of all the sugars. And then, you know, you have coconut sugar, which is about 35%, maple syrup, honey, 40-odd percent fructose. And, of course, we seductively think, oh, we're eating healthy sugar, and then we eat more of it. So I find those health food products really problematic.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask you about coconut sugar because that's getting really popular. So you said that has about 35%?
Yeah, and then there's also, it's, you know, called all kinds of things. It's essentially palm sugar, and then you drill down. I know that there's coconut blossom nectar sugar, and I hear mixed reports on that front, but essentially from what my understanding is it's 30% fructose. And like I say, what happens is that when you think that it's healthy, you eat more of it. So you end up consuming the same quantity.
So even things like rapadura sugar, that's still sugar.
Well, yeah, people say to me, exactly, it's all the same stuff when it's in our bodies. I mean, sure, it's less refined, but really we're not talking about refined or non-refined. We're talking about fructose. Fructose is fructose, whatever format you find, you know, you take it in. And, yes, I mean, people say to me, oh, but it's, you know, it's natural. And I'm like, well, so is arsenic and petroleum. Are we meant to be eating it? You know, that's the question we need to be asking. So I sort of say it's all sugar. And, in fact, even the safe sugars that I promote, like the brown rice syrup, which is glucose, it doesn't contain fructose. It's a slow-release sugar, which is really good. It's got a whole heap of other beneficial properties. You know, the sweet taste itself has been proven or has been shown to continue the sugar addiction. You know, it still will trigger those dopamine hormones. And so I caution against eating too much of it. But the great thing about these sweeteners that I use in my recipes is that you won't get addicted. You can have one piece of, you know, my cheesecake because it hasn't got that same... you know, sort of addictive quality. And what's more, it also, you know, all my recipes involve wonderful amounts of healthy fats, which ensure that you get full and satiated and you don't go back and eat the whole damn cake. You know, you have one piece and it fulfills you.
So you've got a lot of wonderful recipes. I was going through the recipe section. It's like, wow, these are some great ideas. Can you give us one of your favorite recipes, maybe share it with my listeners?
Yeah, well, I guess actually I just mentioned the cheesecake. It's my coconutty cheesecake. And I actually make it using, I mean, you can make it using your standard cream cheese that you buy, you know, in the supermarket. But I actually make it myself, and it becomes a really wonderful fermented probiotic product. And I just make it with yogurt. I get full-fat organic yogurt, and I strain it into curds and whey, basically. So curds are basically, you know, becomes this wonderful, alive, active cream cheese. And it's got the same consistency and taste as the stuff you buy from the supermarket. But all of a sudden, it becomes a wonderful health product. So, yeah, that's probably one of my favorite recipes. It's really easy to make. The base is made out of coconut and nuts. And so it fills you up. It's really nutritious.
Is that on your website, Sarah?
We've got a similar recipe on my website, but that recipe is in the book,
okay.
I Quit Sugar, which is obviously available now all across America. In fact, around the world, in more than 20 countries now, the book's available. And then one recipe that you will find on my website is a recipe that is probably one of the favourites out there. It's my chocolate raspberry ripple, and it's a chocolate bark. One of the simplest recipes you can make, and it's made with coconut oil, raw cacao, some frozen berries, and coconut flakes, or, you know, you can use desiccated or shredded coconut. And honestly, it takes 5 minutes to make, and I could sometimes say it's healthy enough to eat for breakfast, because quite honestly, it is. but it's, people eat it, and they go, oh my goodness, I don't need to go and eat commercial chocolate anymore. This is, you know, this is the bomb. so that's a really popular one. But then, you know, I've got some savory recipes. I think my zucchini cheesecake is a really popular one. It's embedded with lots of vegetables, lots of great nutritious fats, and it's sort of made up like a cake, and you eat it for breakfast. And it's a great one if you've got friends coming over for brunch. And it's also a great one if you're busy. You make it on the weekend. You cut it up and put it in the freezer, and you can roll it out during the week for breakfast. Just sort of heat it up in the microwave or whatever you like. And that's a really good one. It's a really good foolproof one with some beautiful fresh flavours that are also good for your digestion. You know, it's got sort of fennel in it and that kind of thing. So, yeah, but they'd be some standout hits, I'd say.
Oh, they sound fantastic. And for people who are now drooling over these recipes, they can go over to your website, which is I Quit Sugar, and visit what Sarah is doing there and the programs that she's offering, and some great recipes there as well, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of information there, and I'm really sort of intent on ensuring that there's free information there for people. So if you've got questions, they're all answered there. You know, what about wine when you quit sugar? What about fruit? What if I'm pregnant or lactating? What are, you know, all of that stuff is answered there with lots of wellness information. It's a blog that's updated several times a day. Very big community around the world that interact and share information. So, and lots of recipes. So, yeah, please do check it out. And you might want to do that before you buy the book, so that you know what you're in for. And I really like people to feel comfortable before they buy, you know, buy the book and commit. So it's a good place to start.
Well, I think you've really inspired everyone today, and I encourage everyone to take up the challenge and go for it. Give up the sugar, realizing if you've been listening to what we've been talking about, and there's the new movie out called Fed Up. You've probably heard about that, Sarah.
I've been in touch with Laurie David, and we're in email contact talking very excitedly about what we're going to work on together to ensure this message gets out there, yes.
Absolutely. So, you know, the message is getting out that sugar is one of our food enemies, I guess you might say, that we really need to eliminate out of our diet if we want our health back. You can't have both, at least not the way we've been doing it. So what you've given us, Sarah, what I love is that you can have your sweets, you can have your desserts, you can have all those yummy things, but they can be healthy for you. So it's adding to your health and vitality. It's not depriving you and draining you of your health. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So this has been a delightful conversation, Sarah, and thank you for sharing your journey with us and the inspiration of being the phoenix emerging out of the ashes and finding a path that really is making the difference for just, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of people around the world. So I just want to thank you for the hard work you've done to make all this happen, and I wish you all the great continued success.
My pleasure, and thank you very much for your support, and good luck to all the listeners out there who think they might give it a go. I applaud you, and I'll probably see you on social media as you interact with me and my team as you go through the process.
Well, good. I encourage everyone to go for it. Why not? And, yeah, just wishing you all the best, Sarah. Thanks for joining us today, all the way from Sydney, Australia. And I just want to remind people before we sign off that Sarah's book is available on Amazon and I guess lots of other bookstores.
Yep.
And your website, no doubt. And go and visit iquitsugar.com, which has lots of great information that Sarah's put together. So, Sarah, thanks again for starting your day with us. It's been a real pleasure having you with me here on the show.
It's been a delight. Thank you.
And thank all of you for joining me once again. And I look forward to having you return next week with some more inspiring, uplifting, transforming information. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.